Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And only on another very, very hot and last August day.
Blisteringly hot.
Yeah?
I drove through Woodland Hills on the way here. They said 112.
Yeah.
Which should be illegal.
Crazy. It's like Vegas hot.
Unbelievable.
It's hell hot, I guess.
Well, and not only that, but there was a lightning strike today in Central California that put out a Southern California Edison plant. And so these people were without air conditioning in 105-degree heat. And thunderstorms on such a hot day like this. But there was fires as well. So lots of danger going on. Of course, our thoughts and prayers are with the people who are dealing with Harvey down in Texas right now.
Absolutely.
Well,
so. What a tragedy that is. Yeah. And record rainfall in the continental United States.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It certainly is. So we are blessed, actually. We'll put up with the heat.
Hey, if there's anybody who can handle it, it's those Texans down there, man. They can take just about anything. So I'm sure they'll find a way to turn it to the good. So I know because I married one. So.
Oh, you did?
Hey, if she can turn me
she's
toward the
Texas?
Good, man, a hurricane should be no problem. She's a Dallas girl.
Oh, I did not know.
Yeah, I had to get a special permit to marry a Texas girl, but it all worked out okay.
You're a bad boy today, man.
Michael, how you doing?
I wish I was doing a little bit better, but I'm doing fine.
You look great.
Well, that's all the lighting. I take it with me everywhere
our
I go.
Wonderful fluorescent lighting in here.
Really? Good Lord.
Well, it is a beautiful day here in Southern California, despite the heat. And if I dare say it, I believe we have a beautiful show for people as well today, don't we?
I think you are right about that, Andrew. We are joined here on State of the Arts with our guests, Christopher Raymond and Maura Hanlon-Smith. So let's say hello to them.
Yeah.
Welcome, guys. So good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Have you been well?
Be here.
Happy and well? You survived the heat this morning?
Yeah, I survived the heat this morning out running around. And this, you know, the San Fernando Valley is so incredibly hot, but it was hotter downtown.
Unbelievable. It was, really?
Yeah, it was hotter downtown.
You mean because it's so dense downtown with the buildings and the airflow is different?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Literally, a gentleman walked almost into my car.
Oh.
He was so hot and so kind of blind with hot. And I was like, beep, beep, beep. And he looked up and was like, oh, wow.
wait.
Carry a hose and just spray people down
again.
As you go. You
say
know?
That again? How did he say that?
Oh, wow.
Oh, it might have been a little something else there.
Yeah, that's very possible. Very
downtown.
Possible. Christopher, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Doing
good.
Great.
Well, we are obviously glad to have both of you here, and it's an honor to have you here in the studio
Absolutely.
With us.
Absolutely.
We look forward to talking to you more in just a moment. But before we do, Michael, we should pay some bills. What do
yes,
you think?
I think you are so right. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed. They do such a good job contributing to the arts in Southern California, both of those entities, so
no
we're
doubt
happy
about
to be
it,
with
Michael.
Them. And Andrew.
Before we get back to our guest, yeah?
Yeah.
I was dying to know a little bit. I mean, they obviously are waiting very patiently here, but they're in air conditioning, so I don't think they can complain. Right?
Are they?
They are.
Briefly, too cool
it was
here.
Cooler in here than it was in the hallway. So
well,
I
that's
felt
because
good
I walked
it.
In. But yeah.
You said cool anyway.
You know what?
Michael, you got to tell me about your week. Now, I know you've had some craziness going on. Did you get out to see any theater?
I didn't. I did not. But I did want to talk about something that I did see that I failed to talk about last week.
Tell me
and
about
that was I went to see in concert the great Jack Jones.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And are you familiar, Christopher, with Jack Jones?
I don't know Jack Jones.
He's 79. That's probably why you don't know him. But
that's
one
not,
of the recording business and great star of records and concerts.
Yeah.
Nice. And I must say, the man is always a good-looking guy. 79. He looks 59.
Wow.
And he has the voice that he's always had.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And he just cranked it out. He did 90 minutes, sold out at Catalina Bar and Grill.
Wonderful. Is that where it was? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
and
such a great
some
yeah.
stars in the audience was kind of fun. Some of his friends like Connie Stevens.
Wow.
And the like. But boy, oh boy, he put on a heck of a show. So Anytime you have a chance to see this man who, as I said, at 79 can be singing like he was when he was recording, you need to go see him.
Now, is this a touring show or was it a one-night engagement?
It was a two-night engagement, actually. And he plays the room every once a year. So I wanted to make sure I caught it this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, that's really the only outing I had, other than what we talked about, not being able to attend the opening of Hamilton.
Which is a blow, no doubt about it.
And I sent you, who was my guest to begin with, but you got to go. So
I represented State of the Arts the best
I could.
You did
indeed.
So I clapped for two, man, I'm telling you. Well, obviously, Michael, I mean, shows like that at the Catalina Bar and Grill are such a thrill to get to go watch because you get such an upfront and intimate portrait of that performer.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good stuff like that. If people get a chance to check out Performing Arts Live, there's two or three shows like that I saw last night.
Fantastic.
Going on around the South.
So how was your week?
I had a good week. It was a busy week. School started back, and obviously with the heat and everything that's going on around the country, there was lots of stuff going on, checking on family from Texas and that sort of thing. But above all, I was thrilled to find that Labor Day weekend was coming up. I look at my calendar, and I said, oh, my goodness, Labor Day weekend's coming up. Michael, do you have any big plans for Labor Day?
I wish I did. I could say I did.
Can I come over for a barbecue or something, man?
You may. You have to bring the barbecue, bring the food, you have to cook it. And yeah, you can come
It's worth
over.
It if I can get away from the kids for a couple hours. So.
No, bring them. I've never even met your children. You know that.
Is that? Oh, my goodness, that is true. We have to do a bring your kids to work someday. I'll bring a little boy in.
Put a time limit on it, but yeah.
Maybe they can take over the show.
Crazy.
I wish I could put a time limit. But they did. They started back at school, and of course, there's lots of interesting things going on, and you always realize how important the arts are in a scholastic environment. You realize how many programs are cut and that sort of thing. And it was interesting. We live in such an artistic part of the country. On the very first day of class, my kids had music. And that just made me feel good because I know that back home where I'm from in the Midwest, they've cut so many of those programs. So reminded me how lucky we are to live in California.
Indeed.
I agree with that. Both of my children both have music classes still and fine arts.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. So important now.
And they're both amazingly talented.
Well, both my kids want to play guitar.
I say that unbiasedly.
Both my kids want to play guitar, too, which I love because when they see that at a young age, you know, that it kind of sticks with them so much longer. So are your kids singers or actors or dancers? Everything?
My son, Aiden, is an actor.
Very cool.
He's a movie star.
Oh.
Yeah, he just made his first movie.
Work, yeah. He does
good work if you can find it, being a movie star.
Yep. And he's delightful and charming and
wonderful
and compassionately hysterical.
And a very old soul.
It's so true. He likes to sit and chat.
Wow.
And he actually won't walk away until, like, you've finished your conversation. And then next time he sees you, the first thing he'll say, you know, when we were talking last time, how's that going with that?
How wonderful.
I know. He's a unique individual.
Wow. Sounds like he was raised well.
He was raised well.
Mm-hmm. It's all about
and your daughter is a...
And my daughter is a fabulous gymnast.
Wow.
The highest level gymnast.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Olympic gymnast?
She's 16.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll see.
Yeah. So has she been doing it since she was 3-4 years old kind of thing? It's interesting. I've had an experience with young gymnasts and kind of how kids are introduced to gymnastics. And what an addictive sport. I mean, learning a handstand, you want to get your handstand perfect. Learning a cartwheel, you want to get your cartwheel perfect. I was shocked at how many of those kids running around there just kept wanting to go back and more and more and more.
More and more and more. And also, we just did it because she was a daredevil. We had no interest in having an athlete.
Yeah, I'm sure, especially with the travel and all of that.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
We thought, how expensive could a Leo be?
Right. Well, now, obviously, we'll get back to talk to our guest here more in a second, but we should give our first guest his proper introduction.
How does that
sound, Michael?
Let's do that.
Our first guest is an NAACP award winner as well as a Stage Raw award winner for his work in theater. He is highly acclaimed composer, writer, producer, conductor, musical director, and pianist for both theater and film.
He recently co-wrote the theme song for the show Troy, which opened in July of this year at the 80,000-seat Beijing National Stadium and was performed by Jackie Ivanko and co-written with Tyler Bates, the composer for Guardians of the Galaxy, and Sebastian Cano Biscuit.
In January of this year, he musically directed, conducted, and composed music and lyrics for the 27th Annual Ovation Awards at the Amundsen Theater. He was the co-producer and musical director for the 2015 Los Angeles revival of Green Day's musical American Idiot, which won 5 Broadway World Awards, including Best Musical and Best Musical Direction.
He also musically directed and conducted Doma Theater's production of Dreamgirls, which was awarded Best Musical at the L.A. Drama Critics Circle Awards and at the L.A. Weekly Awards. He worked as an on-staff musical director, composer, and producer for Doma Theater for over 5 years, and our friend Marco over there, Marco Gomez, yeah. Which is no more, Doma. Is that correct?
Doma's on hiatus right
it
now.
It is on hiatus. That's what Marco said, but I thought he was just meaning like a couple months or something.
Right, yeah. It's been
he'll come back when he needs to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
And Christopher here, our guest, was involved in 14 productions with that company, and I must say that was one of the outstanding musical theater companies on that level in Los Angeles. Boy, everything that I ever saw them do was fantastic.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes,
he has written the book and lyrics, of course, and the music for a new show entitled Scarlet Letter, the musical, based on Nathaniel Hawthorne's novel, with stage readings coming to the Hudson Backstage Theater in Los Angeles on Sunday, September 17th, and on the 24th.
And yes, where are you? What page are you? Andrew and I were having a little side conversation. Sorry about that.
Obviously, we are so happy to have him here with us today, and it's a fascinating and enthralling work that we're going to talk a little bit more about. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a very warm welcome.
Barbara Warwar.
You know what? It's because of the heat, my lips started to melt. Let's give a very warm welcome to the truly gifted Christopher Raymond.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome, very much.
Man, oh man, I got to say, what a pleasure to have you here. But you got to be 97 years old with all the work you've packed into your life. Is that correct?
No, I'm actually 96.
Speaking of people who are great for their age, you've done so much. And you were telling me a little bit about Troy before we started. Mm-hmm. You said live horses on stage on this venue for a movement show, essentially, with music, of course.
Yeah.
Wow, talk about
so that was a pretty interesting thing. I used to work as a music assistant, arranger, and lyricist for a film composer named Christopher Young. He did Hellraiser, Nightmare on Elm Street, Spider-Man 2 and 3, a lot of different things. And through working for him, I became friends with Sebastian Canobiscay, and he brought me in to work on this project and ended up writing lyrics for the theme song, which was sung by Jackie Evancho, and that just opened in Beijing. So
Jackie Evancho being from Britain's Got Talent? Was
right.
that where she was discovered by Simon Cowell?
Yeah, when she was, I think, like 12 years old or something
she's
like that. She's only 17 now.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
So, and she's hugely talented, and it was so fun to hear her, you know, singing this song. because I sang the demo recording just so she could hear how the lyrics were supposed to flow, and it's a 7-minute song.
Wow.
And then I heard her sing it back, and the phrasing was exactly the same, but of course done with her beautiful, gorgeous voice. But the phrasing was the same. That was such an interesting experience. I got Scarlet Letter, which I'm working on. I started writing it about 2 years ago.
Tell us about this, yeah.
And it's the first show that I've written completely by myself. I wanted to base a musical on a great story. I knew I wanted a story that, you know, really meant something. And you just couldn't ask for better material than the book, The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. I always loved it. And it's almost Shakespearean, the characters. And it's really been a blast putting this together. And I have a wonderful group of actors going to be putting it up with 15 phenomenal LA-based actors.
A friend of mine is in your company, Elvira.
Oh,
Barja.
Elvira's wonderful.
Yes, she
wonderful.
Is.
Yeah, we've done a few shows together.
So you've got, and directed by Gabrielle Grieco?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's lovely and so talented. We've done a lot of work together. So very glad to have her on board.
Should we give a shout out to the rest of your cast members, since this is a production that is a staged reading that is going to go up Sunday, the 17th of September and the 24th of September at 8 p.m. at the lovely Hudson Backstage Theater, which is 6539 Santa Monica Boulevard in Los Angeles. Valet parking is available. Key words there, right?
That's
right.
That's
right.
And it is in the cast, as we said, Elvira Barshaw, Jackie Bianchi, Kelly Brighton, Rich Brunner, excuse me, yep. Robert Glendecker, another young man I know, Tyra Dennis, Andrew Diego, Everjohn Feliciano, Bianca Giselle, Blair Grotbach, Mackenzie Hamilton, Michelle Holmes, Susan Huckle, Michaela Rawls, and Jeremy Sage.
Yes. Wow.
Now,
yes.
Obviously, you have a significant, is it a five-piece orchestra you have there?
Yeah,
as well?
And I have a five-piece band. I'll be playing piano and conducting.
Fantastic.
And have another keyboard, guitar-based drums.
Now, obviously, this project was something that you came up with, and you selected the material. Were you trying to kill yourself at the time? Or what an epic undertaking to try to jump into this material and turn it into a musical. Was that difficult?
You know, it was really a very inspiring experience because the work is so great, the writing is phenomenal, and while I was doing research, I was also reading a lot of other writers from the time,
such as
Thoreau, Ralph Waldo Emerson, and just kind of immersing myself in that time, and also immersing myself. And I should just say the book was published in 1850, but of course it still is so relevant.
Well, it's set significantly
earlier.
But it's
set in the 1600s.
And it uses Old English pronunciations for a lot, but that's been removed for this musical, is that correct?
That's right, yeah. So it is in modern English, and the music is very modern and quite eclectic. I basically, when I was composing this, the rule was that there were no rules. I mean, there's a Latin number in it. There's a gospel song with like a shout gospel chorus in the background.
Cool.
A lot of choral singing going on throughout it. A lot of great grooves, but also very, you know, complex harmony. But for me, it's all about the melody. You know, I mean, obviously the words, but the melody as well. I mean, I grew up on Rodgers and Hammerstein, Rodgers and Hart, Gershwin, Leonard Bernstein. Those are the guys that inspire me the most, I must say.
What was your previous experience with original works? Had you done many of them before?
Well, I started out as a musician. I mean, I'm still a musician, but I started out playing.
But I had to stop.
Yeah. The way that I really got into show business was when I was, 14. When I was 14, I arranged a commercial that Randy Jackson was in. It was an Oreo commercial, but then I played in the orchestra for 13, the musical with Jason Robert Brown.
When I was 14, 15. I was tying my shoes for the first time. Worked brilliantly well.
And he still doesn't have it right.
I was in third grade for like the ninth year, man.
But, wow, yeah, so I did that at the Kirk Douglas, at the Mark Taper Forum, then when I was 17 on Broadway. I played for 13, and that was a wonderful experience.
Cool.
And Tom Kitt was the music director on Broadway, so I learned a lot from just watching him and working with him. And
always piano, that's your instrument of choice?
Actually, I really was a multi-instrumentalist for a long time. I jumped around. I played a lot of guitar, bass, drums, percussion, sang, but now I just play piano.
Cool.
Yeah. And started playing when I was about 5 years old. Which helps. I think it helps to get started early.
Where did you get this talent? Was it from some member of your family, your parents?
Both my parents are musicians. Yeah. On my mom's side, there's a lot of classical musicians, and her uncle was a conductor. And my father played with a group called Jan and Dean for a long time.
I love
Mara remembers that. Yeah.
Surfer Girl, Easy as 1, 2, 3. I love
Surf
that.
City, yes, Little Lady from Pasadena.
Right. Yeah.
And he played with Al Jardine of the Beach Boys for quite a while, too. So I grew up with
you
a lot
did?
Of that music.
Played with the Beach Boys?
His father did.
Well, the Beach Boys broke up.
Your father.
Yeah, my dad did. And I would sit in a lot. So starting when I was very, very young, I would come up and I would sing backup, maybe sing lead for a song, you know.
Wow.
Play a couple different instruments. So I was always on stage. I never thought about doing anything else. From about the time I was 10 years old, I knew that I really wanted to write and compose, and I felt I had a gift for it. So I'm very glad to be doing that.
Do you also love that kind
now.
Of surf music still? Is that still part of you? Do you enjoy that kind of music?
I adore it. I adore it. I love the harmonies. I love the songwriting. Brian Wilson, I really do think, was a genius.
You know, I know some of his family. We've had a couple people connected to him on the show as well.
Yes, we did.
Really, I mean, obviously a musical genius, but beyond that, a social genius. You know, I mean, what he did with Pet Sounds and kind of the way things went truly was culturally significant. Every time we drive through Pasadena, anywhere on Colorado Boulevard, I put that song on for my kids.
You just happen to have it in your car?
I always have some surf music, either Jan and Dean or the Beach Boys mostly. But I'll always try to find it on one of our discs in the car. And I put that on for the kids, and my kids will wail to it. And it's so funny because they didn't know Accelerator. You know, can't take her without the Accelerator. So they said Terminator.
That music, it's amazing how that music holds up.
It does.
And I mean, I grew up going to these concerts, and it'd be huge arenas, and there'd be, you know, tiny kids, people in their 90s, yeah. and everyone in between, and everyone was loving it. And that's yeah. really what I try to do with my work, you know. I love to, you know, put art out there that anyone can enjoy.
Cool.
I think that's so
well,
necessary.
That's key. And anything yeah. that, such as what you were brought up on, you
yeah.
know, should recycle itself, you know, always so that
yeah.
the younger generations can be introduced to that kind of music.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Rodgers and Hammerstein and
yeah.
all those greats out of that golden age.
Yeah.
And because I kind of frankly feel that we are in a platinum age now with Hamilton, you know, setting
yeah. Oh, yeah.
such a
no doubt about it.
Mark on Broadway that has been like nothing that has ever preceded it, really,
mm-hmm. yeah.
In some ways, but yet at the same point in time in the golden age, things were being done, Oklahoma, things like this, that
yeah.
were very, very, you know, groundbreaking in mm-hmm. their
right.
in their time.
It's
so.
About breaking, you know, whatever,
exactly.
breaking down the barriers. And
pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's what Oklahoma
absolutely.
Did. That's what
exactly.
Hamilton's doing right now.
Well, now, obviously,
yeah.
with this show, and it is, it's only in readings right now.
Yeah,
right?
It's just invited readings
can
right now.
Can you tell me where people
space.
Can go to follow the show? Do you have social media up and running for this show? Can people find it, possibly ideas coming out when the cast album comes out, anything like that?
Yeah, well, if you go to my website, officialchristopherraymond.com, there's
and that's
info.
Actually the name of your website, officialchristopherraymond.com.
Yes. That's right.
There is
so
another
many
Christopher.
People were trying to.
Yeah.
No, I think christopherraymond.com by itself is like a plumber or something.
Oh, if you need him, he'll be there.
Man, he's got a great
also
set of
website,
pipes.
Also, website well
know,
worth so. Visiting. But if you visit my website or any of my social media on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you can stay posted. I'm going to be launching all the social media soon.
Cool.
Yeah, and it'll be available to the public soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, so, if someone yeah. was desperate, if Scarlet Letter was their favorite book and they were desperate to see this, how could they find a way to come and see it?
Well, if they email me on my website, then, you know, we'll make it happen.
You'll review yeah. a few and check out and see who's worthy to come see. You have to give them a quiz on the book, make sure they've read it all the way through. So.
That's right. I'll look them up, make sure no felonies in the last couple of years. They've been good boys and girls.
Just the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Things
can't
happen
hold something against people.
People
you
know? For that. 7 years.
I'm excited about this. What a wonderful piece of literature by an amazing writer. And truly, I mean, it's one of the pieces that has been adapted for film. I don't think I've ever heard of a staged version, a musical version of this on stage before, is that correct?
There's been some smaller productions throughout the U.S., but there has not been a major production of it. There's never been a major musical production of it. And there's never been a successful film version of it that was really successful.
Hmm. Who was in the film?
Demi Moore,
yep.
And who was
the guy is...
Dudley Moore.
Nope.
I've always thought that would be great.
I forget Dudley. Who the gentleman was in it. But the problem with that was the first hour or so of it had nothing to do with the book. They just created their own plot for the first hour and then went into the book. And by the time you went into the actual story.
Because really, who needs Hawthorne, you know, when you're unbelievable.
You know, nothing against it, but it's dangerous to do that.
It is.
You know?
Especially when you're trying to appeal to people who love the book.
Yes.
You know, I think that you risk alienating the audience of the book by doing that.
So. Right.
And so there was never, ever anything that preceded that movie?
There were two versions. There was a silent movie version in the 20s, and there was a sound version in the 30s, both of which were fine, but not spectacular.
Right. Tough to do a black and white version of the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah. Well, that's
should have waited.
Good point. Yeah.
It confuses people.
It's a nice time
it?
To have Technicolor. But if you love the book and you come see this, there's the story, but with music, fresh music, you know, fresh faces telling the story. If you haven't read the book, then, you know, you will learn the story, and it's a fascinating story and so relevant to what's happening in the world right now. We're, you know, I mean, I'm a religious person. I mean, I'm Jewish. I'm not anti-religion, but I think people need to be able to make up their own minds about religion and how they want it to affect their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And this story just really dives into that issue, head first. And also, I mean, it's really, in a way, a feminist show. I mean, Hester Prynne is the lead character, if there had to be one in the show.
Absolutely.
Who plays Hester?
A wonderful girl named Bianca Giselle. She's been doing a lot of work at the Rockwell, starring
over
there. And she's just amazing. She's just amazing. She can sing anything. She's just a natural actor, natural talent.
Mm.
She works. She sings all day, every day. She's either recording or performing.
That's her job.
Yeah, that's right. And then Blair Grotbeck is playing Reverend Dimmesdale, who's one of the other leads, and he's wonderful. And Kelly Brighton is playing Chillingworth, the dark character, her husband.
Her husband. I know Kelly.
Yeah. Oh, you know Kelly? Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he goes to Carol's class.
Oh, he does. Yeah. I was thinking about her last night.
We've done a lot of shows together. And Michelle Holmes plays Mistress Hibbins, the witch.
Wonderful.
And we've done at least 10 shows together.
Oh. Wow.
And she can do literally anything. There's no one better than her.
You know who else can do so great? The woman sitting to your left right now.
Uh-huh.
She's an amazing singer.
Absolutely.
Actress.
Yes.
She really is.
Wow. Connections being
so
made
much.
Here on State of the Art. But I got to tell you, my favorite part of doing this show, and there's obviously the free ice cream and all the chicks. You know, that's my favorite part. But my next favorite part is when we get to see a project that we know is going to blow up and do some really great things before anybody else gets a chance to see it. And that definitely is what this is. So we'd encourage all of our listeners to check out the Scarlet Letter the Musical, Scarlet Letter the Musical. And you can go check out the websites, Google the show. But keep your eyes out because this is going to be something really special, some great things going on with this show.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, indeed.
Christopher, what a pleasure. Can you hang around with us for a little bit longer?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Definitely.
Perfect.
We should go ahead and take a look at a tremendous opportunities that we have to see great theater here in the Southland, particularly one show that really stands out for its originality. We're talking about winner of the Tony Triple Crown for Best Musical, Best Score, and Best Book, Avenue Q, is a part flesh, part felt, and packed with heart musical.
This laugh-out-loud musical tells the timeless story of Princeton, a bright-eyed college grad who comes to New York City with big dreams and a small bank account. He soon discovers that the only neighborhood in his price range is Avenue Q, where the residents are raunchy, sweet, real, thoughtful, and outrageously entertaining.
He soon discovers that although the residents seem nice, it's clear that this is not your ordinary neighborhood. Together, Princeton and his newfound friends struggle to find jobs, dates, and their ever-elusive purpose in life.
Filled with gut-busting humor and a delightfully catchy score, not to mention puppets, Avenue Q is a truly unique show that has quickly become a favorite for audiences everywhere.
Avenue Q has been labeled as a Sesame Street-like show for adults. While there are endearing puppets, this show is not for children, but mature audiences due to the adult themes and strong language. This urban fairy tale features a Tony Award-winning score and shows us a place where puppets are friends, monsters are good, and life lessons are learned.
Avenue Q is on stage now through September 7th with performances Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday matinees at 3 p.m. at the OB Playhouse in San Diego. Is that correct? OB?
I think it's OB. Yes, so OB.
Okay, OB. If you sort of look it up that way, you'll certainly find it. OB Playhouse in San Diego. That's my hometown. For more information or for tickets, call 619-795-9305 or visit them on the web at obtheatercompany.com. Don't miss your chance to see this uproariously entertaining show.
Obviously, one of the things that we love about PerformingArtsLive.com is that they cover from Santa Barbara to San Diego and beyond.
They do
everything in the Southland. And obviously, Avenue Q has gotten such rave reviews from so many people, a great chance to go down and see that at a really cool venue. So.
You've seen it here, right? You've seen Avenue Q.
I directed it one time.
Oh, you did?
Wow,
good.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Was that hard to direct for puppets?
Luckily, I didn't personally have to deal with the puppets too much. We had an expert who came in. But it's a wonderful show, and Jeff Marks, who co-wrote it, is a friend of mine.
Yes,
it's a great show.
Very talented man.
Funny, clever, and funny.
Yeah, you saw it.
Yeah,
where'd you see
it? Wonderful. I saw it here. Where did you direct it? I saw
at
it here
at Doma Theater.
I think I saw it at the Doma. Actually.
Wow,
nice.
That's the MTLA Old House.
Music, yes, yeah, Music
sure.
Theater of Los
sure,
Angeles.
Sure, that's where I saw it. Yeah, it was lovely and charming and funny.
Well, thank you so much. And the fact that
it's an intimate theater and location where you could really see the actors.
Very
see
accessible
the
there.
And, yeah, I love that.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, now you've heard her voice. Let's turn to our second guest on the show today. She began her professional career at the age of 16, playing the role of Maria in West Side Story at the Count Basie Theater in Red Bank, New Jersey. And for the next 10 years, never stopped working. Regionally, she has appeared as Marty in Grease, Babe in Pajama Game, Ado Annie in Oklahoma, and Jenny in Shenandoah, just to name a few.
She then played Audrey in Little Shop of Horrors here in the U.S. and continued her love of the role as the first and youngest Audrey in the European tour. She took a break from Audrey to come home and play the lead in the WPA's off-Broadway show 20 Fingers, 20 Toes. Hmm. During this time, she also sang with the world-renowned New Voices of Freedom.
When she returned to Europe, she began to sing and discover her deep and abiding love for jazz music. Upon her return to L.A., she began to sing in countless L.A. jazz clubs, including our very own Sterling's upstairs at the Federal, and at private events. Following a series of glowing reviews, she was asked to open up for Jennifer Holliday at the AIDS benefit in Long Beach.
I did not know that.
After that, she was inspired to write and create her own one-woman shows.
She has performed over a dozen one-woman shows in the Los Angeles area while continuing to sing jazz at festivals and clubs. And in LA, festivals and clubs in LA. She has also performed Candy in Donnie Parvo's cult musical Big Package Tour and had a blast playing Aunt Eller in Musical Theater of Los Angeles's Oklahoma.
In what she laughingly refers to as her spare time, she has written and produced over a dozen children's shows, has written and produced children's albums, including one called Celebration Sings, her own entertainment business she started and now owns and operates, and when she can't sleep, she writes poetry, including one of her poems that will be highlighted in Cats in Cal State's newest works.
She is a talented singer, an all-around artist, entrepreneur, mom, and she's good looking too. Please welcome the amazing Maura Hanlon Smith.
Yeah. Spare time is a luxury. You don't need any of that anyways, right?
No. There is no spare time for a working mom of two.
No doubt about it. Well, and I think any performer, if you don't stay busy, you become complacent. So staying busy is the way to do it. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
I agree. And, you know, my whole life was musical theater and jazz and, you know, what I consider more adult theater. And then the second that I gave birth and was like, oh, my goodness, I need an outlet, I right away just started writing children's stories.
Wow.
And children's plays and children's music. I said, you know, I have to continue this and yet, you know, be respectful for who I am and my position now as a mom.
Absolutely. And that's such a hard balance to strike, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Now,
yeah,
one of the things that you did, I want you to elaborate on, because the name of the tour is I don't even know what it means, the Big Package Tour?
Big
what does that
package?
Mean?
Oh, my gosh. It's a cult. And you know, we would show up and there'd be people screaming and kind of, you know, throwing their panties type tour.
So it sounds like state of the arts, man.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Another day on Thursday, man. I'm telling you.
So we would do venues all over California, and sometimes there would be auditoriums and sometimes cabaret houses.
Wow.
And sometimes, and but people followed this man, Donnie Parvo. I mean, it's all a fantastic act, but I played Candy, who is just the dumbest, most fantastically off-a-beat Vegas girl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, so much fun.
I mean, that's what they
hot
have
pants,
up there in Las Vegas.
And,
Well, and now you played Audrey how many times?
I think I've probably done the show over 900 times.
Oh, my goodness. Now, when I was looking at some of the stuff that's online and some of your resources there, that looks like it was a defining role for you. I mean, you basically lived a number of years as Audrey,
I
right?
I did. I was kind of a career Audrey. I mean, for sure. And
it's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
And what a wonderful show, too.
It's a beautiful show, and I got to work with Albert Tavares, who is the original. And I love him. And Vito, who did Ellen's wig, also did mine. So I really was there.
Ellen Green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ellen Green. And it was funny because, you know, when I walked in, they said, we have never hired an Audrey, like, under, I think they said 29 or something.
Wow.
And so I was 22 turning 23. And they really debated it. And they were like, there's just a thing. And I said, okay, well, I'm in. I've never seen the show. And they said, what? And I said, no.
Wow.
Yeah. And so then they said, I think we'd prefer if you never did.
Really?
And I said, okay. They said, you have this take on the role, and we would prefer if you just kind of went with that.
They didn't want to model it. Wow.
Yeah, they didn't want to model it. And I am so lovingly vulnerable as a performer that they just kind of wanted to embrace that and not have me imitate.
Wow.
So Yeah, so I did overnight.
What a lovely compliment.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I'm walking through a hardware store the other day, and my seven-year-old, my little boy, is there with me, and he saw Venus Flytraps for the first time. And it, of course, led to a conversation, and then, of course, I had the musical stuck in my head for the rest of the day as well, but it led to the story of musicals and, you know, and how, you know, this plant takes on a life of its own. And it was interesting to talk to him about that because in his mind, a Venus Flytrap is a monstrous plant. You know,
sure.
It's a plant that eats animals and such a cool thing. But I thought that was so interesting. I wonder if that was how the creators began to kind of feel that out and start to think of that, because it really did capture his imagination, and he got very interested in the story. I played Suddenly Seymour for him, which he loved, and yeah, there's a lot of cool
but
stuff.
But you have all these things at the ready when you run into these situations. The music from the show just happened to be with you.
Well, you know, we actually carry. I have a whole binder in my car of musical theater stuff. Yeah, in fact, part of it I've started carrying because of you, because Michael knows so much about musical theater. He'll make a reference. I have to go research it after it. But I have a binder of musical theater, if for no other reason than, I mean, honestly, some of the albums that come out, I can't play for my kids.
Yeah.
So I've got to, you know, basically redo my 6-CD changer to put in, you know, stuff that they can. I always have 2 or 3 musicals in the rotation. But on this car trip, we just did 8,000 miles across the country, and we had Whistle Down the Wind by Andrew Lloyd Webber, which I saw in London, and the score is amazing. The show was horrendous. The worst American accents I've ever heard in my life. I suddenly realized how British people must cringe when they come to America and see us doing British fare. But it was so funny because my kids were singing Andrew Lloyd Webber, and I think that's so important for children to get at that age, you know, the idea of, hey, there's other music out there rather than Justin Bieber. So
also, the thing about musicals is that it's storytelling.
Yeah,
very
true.
And that's what I always say to my children. You know, there's some amazingly talented people on the air today. I'm a huge Bruno Mars fan.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few fantastically talented people. Yeah. And for me, I feel it's because they're telling stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they're creating music that tells a story, it makes you feel. And that's the way I feel about musicals. It's always storytelling.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think even the new Disney musicals and that sort of thing has helped build that as well.
Absolutely.
You're right.
Absolutely.
That's true. There's definitely a story with especially this Descendants series that they're doing at Disney, which is quite elaborate. But and musically, though, I'm not sure. I mean, music, it's very contemporary in that particular genre that they're you know, they need that to pull in the viewers, actually, and the kids thrive on that type of music. But it's very decent, and it's memorable because it has a melody. And I always say, as long as it has a melody and you can, you know, key in on some of the lyrics and remember them after the song is finished, then you've got something going. But
absolutely.
That's true. I've 100%. Left musicals and thought, oh, I loved it. Can't think of one song.
Happens a lot.
That's very true.
You really can't hum
very
one
true.
Song.
No way.
And I miss the idea of the ballad that seems to have disappeared from a lot of modern musicals. You know, the completely self-contained ballad that can be sung on its own, which is why it's so refreshing to go see something like Oklahoma, which we saw down in Orange County, and that sort of thing.
Oh, I love that.
Interesting to see. Yeah, some really cool stuff going on. Of course,
3D?
Michael's 3D theatrical.
I saw that with Ken Werther. Because he's presenting these staged readings with me.
Yes,
and he works for your show.
How fantastic.
I mean, he's the publicist, right?
No, I'm the publicist for 3D Theatricals.
But for LA Talk Radio, I mean for State of the Arts.
Oh, yeah, we co-produce and co-hosted, both of us.
And is Ken Werther involved?
No, he's just one of our go-to publicists who
but
we
he is
adore.
A go-to,
he's a friend of mine forever. And we love Ken because he always has something interesting that he's representing.
A great friend of the show and connected all over the place, too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Very much so. You don't want to mess with him. You know.
He's a wonderful guy. Yeah.
It's so funny. Speaking of Oklahoma, I have actually played every female lead.
Really?
Wow. I started out as Lori, then got cast as Ada Wanny. When I did Lori, I was younger. I mean, I was probably 20-ish. And I was like, oh, I want to do Ada Wanny next time. I want to do Ada Wanny. And then Joey Patton cast me in Ada Wanny back in the day. I think I was 23-ish. And I was like, oh. And then MTLA called me and said, Moore, we want you to do Oklahoma. And I said, all right, I'm kind of old for Lori. And I mean, Ada Wanny would
dear.
Be fun. It was that moment. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
That's so funny.
Do you want me for Aunt Ellen.
Ding, 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 ding.
But what a great
role.
I
dropped the phone, laughed so hard, picked it back up and said, I'd love to.
My mother swears that when she thinks of herself just in her head, she always thinks of herself as 17. And yeah. She's just, occasionally she'll go, oh, right, I'm not 17 anymore. Yeah. But it's funny. Aunt Eller's a great role, obviously.
Great.
I always thought Gertie was such a fun role in sure. that. I mean, it's obviously a smaller role, but I always remember Gertie when I see a good Gertie in that role. I thought that was such a fun yeah. thing they did down at
Well, in that particular production that Maura is talking about, took a twist with it and made it very gritty and
cool.
You know, wasn't in presented in the traditional way yeah. that
it wasn't brushed over.
And no,
okay,
it wasn't.
Was down on Broadway.
Robert Moore wanted people that looked like they could run a farm.
Wow.
Right, exactly.
So the lorry was almost bigger than the curly.
Wow.
And yeah. And they thought, you know, an old lady really couldn't run her own farm. So
interesting. That's yeah. very true. Farm
so
stock, you got to be tough. Yeah.
It was just a different kind of more raw.
Well, now we're...
Go ahead.
I was going to ask where people can find out more about what you're doing next and how to follow you, because you've done so many shows and you work so consistently. How can people keep up with you?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I'm a huge Facebooker. I Twitter. I everything. Maura Hanlon Smith. A lot of my stuff I do through my company. You know, I own my own entertainment company called Celebration.
And let's talk about that,
yeah.
too, because it's very unique. And you have made it into
a massive,
to the go-to place.
A life-consuming endeavor.
By movie stars.
It
and
truly is, yeah. I mean, we do, if you're rich and famous, I do your events.
Wow.
That's what I've become known for.
It's a prerequisite, actually.
It's a prerequisite, yeah,
exactly.
It is. Because I say nothing. If I can tell you the story I had this morning. So basically, you know, when we decided to have children and I knew I had to slow down a little bit and I really wanted to be a mom and I really wanted to give them every ounce of energy, I started writing these kid shows and then we would go perform the kid shows and then they'd say, hey, you're so great at this. Will you also do this for us? And then I started, you know, developing after-school programs for these families, doing creative dramatics and this, that, and the other, which led me to doing their parties somehow.
Wow.
They would trust me and say, you know, we're having an event, and you're so creative. Will you design this or that? And then Warner Brothers was like, we're doing this movie called The Little Princess. Will you design the entire premiere? And I was like, sure. And then it became this thing where I just started developing events and doing live stage anything for the rich and famous.
Oh.
I mean, literally, when I think I can talk about it now, but like when Hillary Clinton was in Christina Aguilera's backyard and Christina sang with Great Big World and the whole thing, I produced the entire thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it just began organically with you doing these small little
yeah.
events, and then it built and built.
And built and
wow.
built, and I just adore it.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I really...
It's got to help creatively to kind of keep those juices flowing all the time when you're not
yes,
doing a show.
Yes, because I always have to write.
Right? Yeah.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
I always have to, and I get phone calls in the middle of the night from a client who will say, oh my God, I have to do a speech tomorrow. Write it for me. And I'm like, I'm on it. Or, and again, you know, I wrote... We did 30 kid shows this summer,
wow.
and I only wrote 4. We kept reproducing them, but
wow.
it keeps all of the juices flowing.
I'm sure.
And so it puts some of my wonderful friends to work.
That's a great thing too. I'm sure that's great. Plus
yeah.
contacts, it keeps contacts in touch
Absolutely.
With each other. That's a great thing.
Absolutely.
Which I haven't seen anybody work harder than Maura does in making these parties so successful. Right?
Thank you.
You give it your all.
I do.
And how can people find out about your about where you guys are again?
CelebrationEntertainment.com. Facebook, I have my own, and I also have one for Celebration. We are located at 2 locations in the Valley, one in Sherman Oaks.
And if they go to the website, they'll immediately
see everything.
Awesome.
If you
fantastic.
Go to CelebrationEntertainment.com, you see
you'll
our
see
world.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see our world.
Well, Michael, it is that time.
It is, isn't it?
And now, embarrassing moments.
Our audience is excited
about
it today.
Our
my goodness. Yeah, they're up for this. They want to know what's coming. Wow. Well, now we do something on the show, and it is called Embarrassing Moments, and I bet you can guess what it's about. It's about embarrassing moments. That's how we came up with the name, so it all worked out very well.
Clever.
We're very deep here on State of the Arts. We've had a number of people who've come on and told stories that we remember very well, but the point of them is to tell our young performers listening out there that no matter what happens, the show does go on and your life will continue. You don't need to flee performance just because something goes wrong. Do either of you have something like that that might appeal to our audiences?
Sure. I was on tour one time with a show called Handel's Messiah Rocks. I was playing in the orchestra, which was a fun thing. I was 19, 20. It was really a great show.
At the same time, you were 19 and 20?
I was 19 and I turned 20.
Oh. It was that long of a show.
I was two different people. It was complex. It was put together by Jason Howland, who wrote Little Women, the musical, mm-hmm. and a lot of really talented people involved with it. And we were mainly touring through the Bible Belt, kind of following the Trans-Siberian Orchestra circuit and, you know, other acts like that. Mm-hmm. We had an orchestra, and we had a few great Broadway singers with us. Marty Thomas was one of them. And at a certain point, because we were doing a lot of really beautiful venues, 3,000-seat places, but then one time it was starting to get a little more rugged, and we're in a school auditorium somehow, and we had a giant setup, and we were somewhere in North Carolina, I believe, and that morning, me and the conductor both had very curly hair, and someone decided it'd be fun to straighten our hair. But by the time of the performance at night, our hair was half straight, half curly. We're up there. It's a little crazy. We've been touring nonstop, traveling nonstop. And we're getting ready, and, you know, we have all these musicians, and we also had some synthesized things on tracks that were very loud that we played with. Not much, but some loud synthesizers. And we're getting ready, and the show doesn't look quite as it usually does because we're on a slightly smaller stage. Tons of people. They do the big announcement. We get ready. We all play, and the first track is actually the second track.
So
we're playing, blasting, and the track is blasting.
Oh, no.
You know, and it was just complete madness for about a minute. You know.
And they eventually got it back
on. Yeah, I think they just cut the track completely. But, you know, it's not the ideal way to start a show.
Oh, my goodness.
And the half curly, half straight hair wasn't helping.
Well, now, how did that happen? In your sleep, somebody did that? Or?
I don't. Was it, was
and
a
te- it did
it was
to you and person. Someone else?
Oh, the straightened hair. I believe it was one of the.
You were conscious.
It was
when
one
they
of
did
the
it, right?
players in the orchestra had
you,
a hair.
You
straight.
Agreed to it, right?
We did agree.
Okay,
to
good.
It.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
They
I don't know why, but
out.
We did.
Yeah. Is it, did you ever get the audience back, or were they just gone after that?
We did.
What a tough thing to recover from.
Yeah, I believe that we did. The thing with that show too was that everyone. You know, who was coming was very familiar with Handel's Messiah,
sure.
the classical show, the oratorio. But this one had more of a rock spin, Broadway spin, and there were some people who were not crazy about that. It was a very interesting time, but it was a pretty spectacular show. So, but you know, the show did go on.
Yeah. Awful and great at the same time.
Oh my goodness! I was off Broadway at the WPA, and I played Violet Hilton. Now, as you know, the Hilton sisters were Siamese twins. Mm. So I was attached to Anne Brown, the lovely Anne Brown, by a girdle. So every day we would go into the girdle, and it was not easy because she likes to move, and I like to sit and, like, pray and ground myself. So we'd be pulling each other around backstage. And so finally they got us a chair, and they were like, you girls just sit here. Now, I think we were off maybe for 5 minutes of the whole show. So here we are, it's intermission, we're sitting. And we stand up for our big opening number for the second act. And I'm like, Anne, there's something wrong with the girdle. I'm like, the girdle is off. I'm like, let's adjust a little. We're adjusting. And all of a sudden, we're walking towards stage, and I was like, what is happening? What is wrong? We see from the WPA that the stage manager's back there, and we hear... We had a chair attached to us.
Oh, no. Call that a bustle.
When we
a bustle.
Stood up, the chair hooked right on to our girdle.
Oh, no.
And we were about to do our big, huge number.
Did you make it on
the
stage?
Chair
did they get
attached?
It?
No,
oh, thank
right
goodness.
Before.
Oh, thank
like
goodness.
The second before we walk on stage, he goes, the chair, and rips it.
Oh,
off.
How horrible.
That is funny.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was hard to keep a straight face.
Yeah, that's one that's tough to get the audience back from, too.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Of course, this show later became another show. The story did.
Sideshow, of course.
Yeah. Of course. That is very funny.
I'm aging myself. I was the pre-sideshow.
That was pre... Oh, wow. So that really was before the show reached its final incarnation. My goodness.
What an odd title, though, really.
20
I mean,
fingers, 20 shows.
Yeah.
20 fingers, 20 shows.
Oh, there was a song, too? Uh-huh. Oh, and an upbeat song?
That was the story of the Hill Sisters before it was... Wow, my goodness.
Fascinating life, for sure, those girls.
Mm-hmm. And 3D did Sideshow.
We did. Yeah, yes, we did.
Sideshow is lovely.
I have a friend who gets Sideshow and Side-by-Side by Sondheim confused always has references that come in from one to the other. And it's interesting because the Hilton Sisters had such an interesting story.
Sure.
I didn't know it had a previous incarnation. That's amazing.
Yes, it did. The first one was Michael Danziger and Bob Nigel.
Wow.
And then it wasn't kind towards the girls, and it made it look like their life was too easy at the same time. So, anyway.
Amazing. Wow. Well, obviously, Michael, we've had a lot to talk about here today.
We have.
We want to say again that our thoughts and prayers are with the people in Texas and Louisiana who are suffering the effects of that right now. We're so fortunate to live in a place, and obviously we're a coastal city, so it can happen here too. But we have so many great responders, so many people doing such diligent work to keep us safe. And beyond that, we have such a thriving artistic community where we can go and escape some of that. Hard to remember what people are going through elsewhere, so
indeed,
let's keep them in mind.
Yeah.
Michael, where do I get to see you next week?
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you, wherever I am, but you will see me next week right here on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.